This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Whenever I hear the tunes, I always want to start the show positively. However, another game, another defeat for the Hornets on a ground where they've now failed to win in 13 league visits. Yes, Goodison Park, not the happiest hunting grounds, it's fair to say, for Watford. But then I suppose you could say it's not the happiest of hunting grounds for most clubs at the moment. Everton not conceding a single goal at home since February the 6th and very much on the march with the man Marco Silva. We don't like to talk about him too much on this show, of course. In comparison, Javi Gracia is now on 6 defeats in a row, his worst ever run as a manager, and appearing in what appeared to be a rather subdued mode after the game yesterday. Understandable, I suppose you could say, just 1 in 8 Premier League games. And if you revert to the back end of last season, that was, of course, over the already relegated Huddersfield Town. He said, "I think we deserve better. We had more possession. We had more shots on target. We dominated some spells, but we didn't score, and we need to try better next time." Indeed, they do. I'm delighted to say that we've got a fan who was at the game yesterday immediately on the line. Amy Stanton, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on, Matt.
Very well. Delighted to have you, Amy. It's good to have a fan who's been at the game who can discuss what happened, why it happened. The 1-0 defeat to Everton, like I said, not the happiest of hunting grounds for Watford. Haven't won in 13 league visits. It's tricky times at the moment for Watford. What's the feeling amongst the Hornets fans?
I think it's quite mixed and varied sort of throughout the fans. Obviously, we haven't won sort of 1 in 8 sort of. And I think at the end of last season, our heads were probably turned by the FA Cup because it was a dream season for us, really, sort of last year, finishing off. For me, I think I wipe a clean slate. So I just see it that we've lost the first 2 games. I like to try and keep positive, and I think we've got West Ham coming up at home and then Newcastle away. So for me, I think I'll start to panic after those games. But losing the last 2, a bit disappointing, but we don't need to panic too much just yet.
Absolutely not. And those teams you mentioned, of course, also haven't had the best start to life in the Premier League this season. It's quite funny. I was talking to the guys before the show and we're only in the 3rd game of the season. I know you're talking about wiping the slate clean and starting again, but 3 games in, this is actually already quite a big one, isn't it?
It is for us as well. And I think the pressure will start to mount, like I say, if we don't get sort of results in the next 2 games, because moving into sort of September, that's when we start seeing people at Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs. So they're the sort of games that you almost get bonus points from, as I like to call it. So traditionally, we did obviously have such a good start to the season sort of last year. But I think we can't compare too much because, like I said, we need to try and focus on this season, not put too much undue pressure on the boys yet, because we don't want them to feel that pressure adding up and then it affect their performance even more. But hopefully, I think against sort of Newcastle and West Ham, we will pick up those sort of points because they're feeling the same pressures. So it should make it a little bit more of an even keel. If they were winning their games and were more confident, I might be a bit more worried. But I think going into that, hopefully, we will start to get those goals and get those points coming through.
Absolutely. Well, listen, it's well documented in terms of the hierarchy at Watford and the fact that since Sean Dyche, pretty much in 2011, that revolving door in the manager's office has been pretty busy. Now, Javi Gracia obviously signed a new deal. It looked like he was going to be the man, or is, I'm not going to use that in the past tense, to take Watford forward. There is some faith in him. He has been the longest serving manager for a while now. But I was asked the question before I came on air as to whether he was going to start being a bit under the pressure after these first 2 defeats. What's your view on that one?
I think that he's got the support of the boys. And I think that's the most important thing. In the moment, in the changing room, he's got the boys who support him, respect him and work for him. And I think while he's still got that, and I think he will have that for the next few games, I think he will be quite safe. I think come sort of moving into September, when, like I said, we are playing the sort of top 6 sort of teams, if we then haven't got those results, I think the pressure will mount and something will potentially be sort of done and they may look to replace him. But I think right now we've just got to believe in him. We all got behind him and believed in him last year and look at the miracles that sort of he made happen. So I think for the time being, he will be safe. But I think come the end of September, if we haven't started turning things around, there may look for some change there.
I think you're right. And in terms of the results, you look at the results, of course, they're not good. Only a narrow defeat yesterday, not so much against Brighton. That one was quite emphatic. But, you know, Watford is still, I mean, possession-wise, you were superior. You still had chances. You look at the chance with Deeney, a great save from Jordan Pickford. You look at Craig Dawson hitting the bar with a header. You look at the fact that Doucouré, had he been slightly more accomplished in that final third, he might have scored too. So the chances are there. They are being created.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's the hard thing. So being at sort of Brighton, watching Brighton against last week, we just didn't seem to want to be fighting for the ball. We didn't have our normal tempo. Yesterday, we were fighting for those balls. We had that tempo. We were really, I felt, more sort of competing. But I know, like, the managers come out, different players have come out and said sort of we were unlucky. But I think you always make your own luck, and we've got to take those chances when we get them. Because at the end of the day, you don't sort of stay in the Premier League by your performance. You stay in the Premier League by scoring those goals and getting those points. So we really do just need to stop almost excusing things and saying we're unlucky and make sure we are finishing those opportunities when we get them.
Interestingly, because Harry Grathia did actually use that exact word. He said, I thought we were unlucky. The ball came from a long ball, of course, and it was deflected off the foot of Craig Dawson. And I do want to touch on Craig Dawson because we've seen in the two games, of course, he was brought as a centre-back. He is dangerous from set pieces, and that's twice now. He went very close against Brighton, close again yesterday.
I think it is good as well, though, that he's got the confidence to sort of go forward as well and not just sort of stick in the fence. And it shows, I think, the strength of the team as well, that we've got players that can move around and trust in each other when they do that as well. I think the only thing I think we may then struggle with that is if the boys don't almost wake up, because I think I've seen in the last two games, it's very different to last season. That last season we started games and we were on it straight away, and we've been a little bit slower to react. So it's just if he is going forward into those more attacking roles, making sure that the other players are switched on to that and are picking up sort of in the defence when the ball's coming back as well.
I have to ask you about VAR, and we're not going to dwell on it because I have talked until I'm blue in the face about VAR on this station, and I absolutely hate it, and I think it's going to completely ruin the game, or perhaps already has ruined the game. But there was an incident yesterday. Gerard Deulofeu obviously went down under the challenge of Yerry Mina, and VAR didn't give it as a penalty. Upon inspection to myself, it looked like it could have been. What was the view from the Watford fans?
So I myself, actually, I was in Liverpool until earlier today, so I haven't had a proper chance to really sort of look at it. But from what I heard of other people on the turnstiles or even Everton fans yesterday when we were sort of still in Liverpool, they all said that they thought they were lucky that we didn't get given that penalty. So I personally feel from sort of experience, it's almost sort of two games in two now that we've had chances which maybe should have been penalties. And I feel as a fan, it does take away that bit of excitement. And the sort of almost intrepidation that you're just waiting for things to be taken away from you or play to be brought back as well. So, no, from my perspective, I do feel like it's a bit of a struggle, but I think VAR is something that we're going to have to learn to accept, even if we don't really sort of like it or feel it's got that place in the game.
Absolutely. So on the penalty, are you staying wise on that one? You're not gonna give me an answer.
I'm gonna say I personally think from seeing it during the game without obviously seeing it on VAR, I thought it was a penalty. But like I said, I haven't the opportunity to watch it back on VAR, but no, my gut reaction was that it should have been.
Well said, well said. Enjoyed a night out in Liverpool, took the advantage of being in Merseyside, of course.
No, definitely. I'd never sort of been to Liverpool before, and their fans were so welcoming. When we were walking to the ground, walking back, they were coming and shaking our hands and saying that was a really sort of great performance. So all the articles around this rivalry between sort of Watford and Everton, I didn't feel that at all during the game. They wanted to come up. They wanted to talk to us, congratulate our players. They were really interested in talking about the game, which I found really, really refreshing, that they were open to sort of discussing points and there wasn't any tension there at all.
Yeah, very much so. Not the Marco Silva derby anymore. That has definitely run its course. Now, Amy, just before you go, Danny Welbeck came on yesterday. Ismaïla Sarr is obviously going to come back in as well, the record signing for the club. But Danny Welbeck, good to see him back on the pitch. How was he? I know it was difficult for him to impact the game, didn't really get much touches, but what was it like seeing him?
Well, his first touch on the ball was quite rusty, to put it sort of lightly. But after that, I did feel like he started to have, sort of in the time he was there, an impact on the game. You could technically see that he has got a high level of skill. And I think considering how long he's been injured, the fact that he had that quite quickly was really nice to see. And it offers a lot of potential. The Everton defenders, you could see once he came on, were a little bit more nervous about him. Which was almost nice to see. And I just think he's really going to add that extra depth of pace on the wing as well, and almost refreshing up the sort of routines the boys normally have. So yeah, I think he will have a long-term really positive impact on the team.
Lovely. Amy Stanton, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
That was Amy Stanton, a Watford fan who was at the game yesterday and full of optimism. That is what we love to hear on the Watford Fan Show here on Love Sport. Right, after this, I am positively giddy about the guest that we've got in the studio.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Good evening, this is Love Sport Radio and the Watford Fan Show with me, Matt Beadle, with you through until 8pm this evening. Coming up after this, we've got the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. After that, it is the Manchester United Fan Show at 9pm. But it is the Watford Fan Show for now, and I am delighted to say that joining me in the studio is, I don't know, what can you call him? Watford royalty, perhaps? A Watford legend? Has he reached that status? I do not know. However, Richard Lee is here.
Yeah, I'm neither of those things.
No?
But thank you. I wouldn't say so. No, I look, don't get me wrong. I love my time at Watford. Love the Watford fans. Still look out for Watford every week. Definitely not in the legends category, but no, I had a great time there.
Do you, however, because legend is a term, obviously, that's used very, very loosely nowadays. And Jimmy Carter does a lot of work for us on Love Sport Radio, and he's often nipping out to play Arsenal legends games. Now, I love Jimmy, a top bloke, but if you speak to most Arsenal fans and say, who are your Arsenal legends? I'm pretty sure they're not going to say Jimmy Carter.
No, not so much. And I haven't been asked to play a Legends game yet. So there you go. That's the proof is in the pudding.
You've never been asked back?
No. I mean, I go back, obviously, to games regularly. And they're always brilliant with me there. Obviously, Watford fans will probably know some of the people that I'm talking about. But certainly Richard Walker in particular in the press department always looks after me. So anytime I go back there, I'm treated really well and love going back to the club. I'm overdue a game, actually. I haven't been for a little while. I went to the FA Cup final, of course, and that was great fun, bumping into so many old faces, which I loved, to be honest. So I'm hoping to get to a game again soon.
What kind of old faces are we talking?
All the fans. Do you know, this is the thing about Watford, and even the fact that, of course, the FA Cup final, there was, 40-odd thousand Watford fans. It's amazing how many you see who you recognise. I must have seen 100 people, you know, just walking through, walking to my seat. Must have seen 100 people that I knew, and it was great to catch up with so many people. But that's always been the beauty of Watford, I think. And maybe it's the same at most clubs, but certainly Watford more than any that I've known, in that it is still the same people that are turning up week in, week out. And certainly, you know, I still remember walking down from the tunnel back down the hill down to the car park, and you would see the same faces week in, week out. And I'm sure it's still the same now. I hope it is, because that was always the big thing that Watford was built on. It is a family club, and I really hope that's still the same. The impression I get is that it is.
You mentioned the fans there, so you said that you recognised faces. I guess many fans would love to know if the players actually do take notice of those faces. So when you were going to games, were there people you thought, oh, there's that guy again, there's that girl again, there's that kid again? Were there people that you recognised? And in terms of, I guess names is difficult. You can't remember everyone's names. It's hard enough to remember your teammates' names half the time. But in terms of familiar fans' faces, did you recognise them?
Well, after the amount of concussions I got, it's hard to remember my name from time to time. No, there is. Look, do you know what? As always, I walked out the car park and there was a young kid there called Simon, who I signed his autograph book every single time. Simon now works for me, and he has worked for me for the last few years. Yeah, great lad. There was always actually one guy, and a lot of the Watford fans will know Howard, and I don't know if Howard is still, I'm sure he is still going to the games, but really interesting character. Howard was one of these people that knew everything about you. So every time we'd walk up the hill and Howard would find you, he'd come and walk next to you. And he would, as you're walking, he'd be telling you about your career. So it's weird. It was almost like he wasn't talking to you, but he was talking about you to you, if that makes sense. Say me that. Richard Lee went to the same school as Tim Henman. Richard Lee, da-da-da. By the way, I didn't go to the same school as Tim Henman. So that was one thing he got wrong. But everything else would be spot on. Richard Lee, born 5th of October, 1982. Richard Lee, joined Watford at the age of 10. Richard Lee, da-da. So it was bizarre. But he would do that on the way there and on the way back. And every time he'd bring up new facts. So like all the lads knew about Howard. And it was great. Do you know the beautiful thing about Howard, and this summed up not just Watford, but Graham Taylor for me, actually, was there was a few occasions where Sir Howard was always there, home, away, absolutely adored the club. And I always remember a couple of times in particular where I saw Graham Taylor driving away and Howard was sat in the back seat. Obviously, Graham Taylor giving him a lift home, which I thought was great.
No.
Yeah, he used to give him a lift home from time to time, which I thought was amazing. But Howard was diehard Watford.
That is a measure of the man in Graham Taylor, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, he was, I mean, you know, and I've got, this show's not long enough to go into what he did to me, because, I mean, he obviously got my first professional contract, and obviously I was very young at the time, so it would only be me going in and doing, say, team shape with them or going into the odd five-a-side, but the most interesting thing for me when I got my professional contract, my first one, and Graham Taylor was offering it. So he didn't have a lot of say in terms of me actually getting it, because that was a youth staff at the time who decided that I'd deem worthy of a professional contract. But the actual negotiation was with Graham Taylor. Now, he was old school. You weren't allowed an agent for your first contract. So my dad played the role of the agent. Now, my dad, being my dad, who, and anyone that knows me, he's quite a successful businessman. So he's got himself suited and booted, got his pinstripe suit. He's got 3 pages worth of notes about how he's going to double my wage and so on and so forth. And I'll never forget, we went in there. We were there for 2 hours. My dad's got about 50 points on these pieces of paper. He didn't say a single one. Graham Taylor spoke for 2 hours. He told story after story after story. He then looked at the sheet of paper which had the figures on that I'd been offered. It was a 3.5-year contract. He crossed out all the figures, wrote some new ones, and he said, "You're going to sign that." And that
really?
Was it. That was it.
That's excellent. And yeah. Was your dad just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my dad was like, bearing in mind, and he is, to try and describe my dad, he's a 6'5", powerful businessman, and he was a little sheep. It was so funny. The fact that he was 6'5", ironically, was the reason they signed me as a 10-year-old, because they thought I was going to be 6'5".
Oh, no.
Never quite happened.
What a shame.
Yeah, my brothers are all 6'5", but hey-ho.
That's fascinating on Graham Taylor, because, listen, there are so many stories, so many we've heard over the past couple of years in particular, but he was such a lovely man, and I interviewed him a few times, and the warmth that I got from him was great. But the brilliance of being such a lovely man and having that warmth as a football manager that he was, and the reason he was so successful was because he also had that stern element about him. And whilst he was there regaling you with all these stories, he was also like, "You're signing that."
Yeah.
End of story.
He did. And he, it was only maybe years after it that I appreciated what his, one of his biggest skills were, in that everyone's got their opinions on everyone, but everyone's got their opinions on Graham Taylor in particular. And I guess I never fully appreciated just how intuitive he was, because as much as he was a certain character, he could talk, he could be very inspirational, but he knew each of his players. He knew how to manage each of his players. And even though I didn't have many dealings with him, it was several years later we were talking, and effectively told me who I was. It was, you know, he's like, "The thing I liked about you, Rich, is you're very analytical. You know, you think about things slightly different." And what he said was like, "Wow, how do you know that? Like, you haven't actually, we've never really spent that much time together, and yet dissected my personality like within a minute or so." And I was like, wow. And that really sort of made me realize that, of course, I suppose being a manager, so many different skills you need to have, so many different hats you need to wear, because you're dealing with so many different personalities, so many different egos, which ultimately, if you want a team, a harmonious team, you've got to keep a lot of different people happy. People that have had lots of different upbringings, completely different characters, all walks of life, all countries around the world, and you need to get them working as one, which on the whole, he did pretty much everywhere he went.
Your time at Watford, goalkeeping coach-wise at that time was?
I had Peter Benet, who was my very first, of course, the cat. And that was brilliant. I mean, it was at that point, you know, he was a little bit older, so the service wasn't great, but the coaching was very, very good. Now, he had to hand serve a lot of things because of his age back then. But, you know, obviously dealing with someone like that from the age of 16. I used to get a day off school when I was 16 years old to go and work with him.
Hated people like you, mate.
Yeah, sorry about
Dreams of being a footballer, and you used to see those guys just scuttle off out of English and double science, and you were there writing biro on paper and you're off to play football.
He just practiced my signature over and over. I was that kid as well. You would have absolutely, we probably wouldn't have been friends.
You still do it now. You,
I know, I still do it. I just, it's out of boredom. It's a habit. I know no one's asked for it for 3 years. But
were you massive time? Were you big time?
No,
because
no,
a couple of lads at my school were.
No, do you know what I'd say? And actually, I think this worked in my favour. Like, it's easy looking back now, but probably one of the reasons I think that I made it in terms of making it as a pro was that I never thought I was that good. And that was the truth. Like, even when I was with Watford, it was always a case of, can I get another year? Can I get another year? And it was only really when I was 16, 17, and I always remember it, I was in the youth team, the likes of Lloyd Doyley and Gary Fiskin and some of the others that obviously Watford fans may remember, but I was with these guys and there were rumours circulating that I'd already signed my pro contract. And I hadn't, but at the time, I remember the way that people were talking were like, "Oh, that's not surprising because it's Rich and he's that good." And I never saw myself as being that good, but it was suddenly realizing that other people had this belief in me that I didn't necessarily have in myself. Now, the secondary gain, this is me getting a bit psychological on you, but the secondary gain of me not thinking I was very good was that I worked harder than anyone. You know, when I was a kid, I would get home after school and I'd have a ball in my hand for 4 hours, rolling it against the sofa so it popped up and I could practice my W's. In my mum and dad's house, they had the high ceiling, they had these beams that I could throw the ball up and practice my cross-taking. All the time, I'd have football on in the background, so I'd be watching the Peter Schmeichel highlights. I had a Peter Schmeichel DVD I must have watched 100 times, and I can still play the theme tune in my head because I absolutely adored Peter Peter Schmeichel, goalkeeping, and I would spend hours watching him every day.
I think I know which one you're talking about. Well, was it Peter Schmeichel? Probably was crossed out, and it said definitely the best goalkeeper in the world.
Yeah, I can play the theme tune in my head now because I watched it that many times. And that, if I'm honest, and I was a bit of a robot, I would come home from school, my friend would come over who lived next door, who, a little random fact for you, was Claire Foy, who is the queen in the Netflix series. It was her older brother. They lived next door to me. He would come over every single day. Sorry, random fact for you. He would come over every single day and we'd play football for 3 hours in the back garden. He would just kick shots at me. Once he went home, I'd go inside. I'd go down the bottom room. There was a sofa. There was the beam and the high ceilings. I'd practice my cross-taking. I'd practice my W's and my collapsing dive every single night. And then I had training twice a week at Watford. Thankfully, my mum, she was basically a taxi service. So every Tuesday, every Thursday, she would take me to training. And then obviously every Saturday or Sunday, we'd have a game.
Da, 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 da. Expecting Michael Aspel to walk in a minute, mate, with a red folder. Did Howard know about that, Claire Foy?
No. Well, I don't know, because obviously back then, Claire Foy wasn't a name. So maybe he does now. Maybe if I bump into Howard, he will say, Richly, Claire Foy was a neighbour.
Do you know what you should have done one day, what the players should have done? You should have all decided to club together and find out information on Howard.
Yeah.
So then when you walked down that road with Howard and he started spouting stuff about you, you went, well, actually, Howard. And then started saying all these different things about him and wondered what the shock would have been.
That would have been ideal if I see him again.
I was actually going to just quickly finish on Graham Taylor, because this always happens. We get into a discussion and you elaborate and tell me all about your life, which is lovely. I feel like I know more about you. Tim Henman, by the way, why did that rumour come up?
I don't know. I mean, I actually have no idea. I don't know if it was nearby or what school he went to.
I have no idea.
No. So that was, Howard was a mix. 90% of what he said was spot on. Then 10% was fantasy. That's kind of what I tended to learn. He had a fascination with hair as well, which was quite interesting.
That's quite apt for you now.
True. He'd have loved me now, not so long ago. But yeah.
Graham Taylor, what I was going to ask you was goalkeeping. We always talk about managers that perhaps don't know a whole lot about goalkeeping. I know we've spoken to Kevin Hitchcock in the past and he said that Glenn Hoddle had a really different take on goalkeeping. Some managers haven't got a clue. They leave it to their goalkeeping coach. Your time, you said you had Peter Bonetti. Kevin Hitchcock was there for a bit as well. Yeah. Did Graham Taylor get involved in the goalkeeping side of things? Did he have a knowledge about goalkeeping?
He had a knowledge, but no, he didn't get involved massively. So it's Peter Bonetti under his realm. Then it was Alec Chamberlain, did the player coach role for a period of time and then was obviously outright coach. Obviously, Kevin Hitchcock between then as well. And then Alec for a long period of time while I was there, pretty much until I left. In fact, until I left, it was Alec Chamberlain was the coach and he was brilliant as well. The fact that with all of them, in different ways, they were very, very good. With Alec, the fact that he had played very recently and could really empathise with what you were going through. Also, I think with Alec, and I've only found this out in the last couple of years, speaking to some of the people that were in charge then and at the club and the chief exec of the club then, how much Alec did behind the scenes as well, which I wouldn't have known of, but he was always keeping an eye on what else was going out there, always looking to learn new drills, learn new techniques. So he's very forward thinking in a lot of what he did. It's a shame in a way. I don't think he's doing a lot of coaching now. I think he does a bit with the Wales under 21s, I think. I think Robert Page, ex-Watford as well, is also involved there. But for me, he was a brilliant, brilliant goalkeeper coach. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him come back into goalkeeper coaching at some point, although I think he's enjoying his golf quite a lot these days.
Now, this is the Watford fan show, so I do want to ask you a question. You've mentioned Howard and a whole load of other fans that you recognised. Chants. I think I might have asked you this before, but I can't remember the answer. Did you have a specific chant at Watford that they used to sing just for you?
Mine was quite dull, if I'm honest. No disrespect, but it was just Richard Lee. Richard Lee.
That's terrible.
Yeah, I know. Brentford fans came up with a really good one for me, in fairness, pretty early on. But no, Watford was it was quite bad. But in fairness, they did sing it quite regularly. I got,
can't stand that chant. Do you know why I can't stand that chant? Because it sounds so droney.
That's it.
Made famous by Liverpool, right? Liverpool fans always used Liverpool.
Yeah.
And if you don't like Liverpool, you probably dislike that chant even more so. Mm. But it's not awe-inspiring. There should have been something funnier.
No, well, this was it. The Brentford fans came up with Richard Lee in goal. It's going to be all right, don't worry about a thing. They did that, and they sang that for a whole half once, which was incredible.
Really?
Yeah, well, it was when I made my comeback. I had a shoulder injury. I was out for 7 months, and they then threw me in. I hadn't trained, but we had a crisis, goalkeeping crisis, and they threw me in away at Tranmere. Now, bearing in mind, I literally hadn't put a pair of gloves on in 7 months, so I probably needed it. And I played okay in the end. We won the game, and I played okay. But the fans, because I had been out for so long, and they knew the situation, I think they were just on my side and just behind me, and it was incredible. For 45 minutes, they sung that song.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, but did you use the moniker Dickie Lee much in those days? Because that would have been, oh, Dickie Lee.
If only you were one of the fans back then. Yeah.
We missed a trick there.
Yeah, we missed a trick.
You just mentioned that time at Brentford. Just quickly on your Watford debut, talk us through that moment, because obviously you came in as a young lad. What was it like going into Watford? I know that a famous centre-back was in front of you that day.
Well, not for long, because he got sent off. But yeah, Sean Dyche did get sent off on my debut. Do you know what? The actual debut itself, the story goes, and I'll give you it very quickly, because I appreciate I'm taking up a lot of your show here, Matthew.
I'm enjoying it, mate. No, that's fine. It's delightful to be looking at you across
the sarcasm in your voice.
I like it, mate.
Anywho, the story goes, Kevin Hitchcock was my coach. Now, football's changed a lot in the last few years. Back then, me and Hitchy got on great. Now, he used to love it when I went on a night out and I'd tell him lots of stories the next day, okay? For whatever reason, that was kind of, he was great. He was a bit like a father figure, but at the same time, an older brother. So everyone would come in and he'd be asking, how was it? Who you out with? Blah, blah, blah. This one time, we had a game on the Saturday. Neil Ardley, who was at Watford at the time, we had a bad defeat, I think it was, and Ard said, look, come on, we're going out. So I was like, fine. So he's an older pro, so you just do what they say. And we went and had a brilliant night out. So the next morning, I see Hitch at training on the Sunday, because we had a game on the Tuesday. So I see him on the Sunday, and I was like, oh, Hitch had a great night out. And I saw the look in his eyes, and it was like a look of disappointment. And I was a bit shocked. I was like, normally he loves it when I'm telling him this kind of stuff. But I could see he was genuinely annoyed. Now, it only clicked on the Tuesday where we're having a pre-match meal at the Hilton in Watford, where Ray Lewington pulls me aside and says, Rich, to let you know, you're making your debut tonight. Now, the reason was we had an FA Cup game, a quarterfinal on the Saturday, a big game that they wanted to rest Alec for. So they were throwing me in on the Tuesday night. Then suddenly it all clicked. The fact that I'd had a big night out on the Saturday, still probably slightly hungover on the Tuesday, it all clicked where Hitchy was a little bit annoyed. So I quickly ran to Hitch to tell him the news. Of course, he already knew. And by that point, Hitchy had also called my dad. And my dad had then got a box, 20 of my friends that all turned up for my debut. So it was all like pre-arranged. I had no idea until literally 2 hours before the game. Instantly got really, really nervous. I'll never forget, I was in the changing room and I went and got my ankle strapped, whatever it was, came back. And Neil Cox, another centre-back at the time, thought it'd be funny to pile my place with toilet rolls. 12 toilet rolls on my place.
Excellent.
Which he thought was really funny. But no, do you know what? The actual debut itself, yeah, I was nervous as anything. Didn't start off the debut particularly well. I remember a shot from distance I spilled but got away with, and I had one in the second half I got away with, but then thankfully made 4 or 5 saves towards the end of the game. They gave me man of the match, whether I was man of the match or not. Well, in fairness, I probably was, because it was a drab 1-0 defeat to Preston on a cold Tuesday night, so there weren't really many highlights. But yeah, it was a memory that I still hold very dear.
Lovely stuff. Well, this is the Watford Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself here with Richard Lee. Plenty more coming up after this.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
Yep, this is the Watford Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, joined temporarily by Richard Lee. Are you okay, Richard?
I'm thoroughly good.
I'm loving having you on this show. I feel like this is a real treat.
Yeah, by the way, thoroughly good makes no sense. I'm just thinking this through. I'm very well, thank you.
You're very well.
Let's go with that.
That was easier.
That was much easier.
Okay, look, we're going to discuss Watford and their start to the season. It's not been great. We reeled off some stats at the beginning of the show. Javi Gracia has lost 6 consecutive matches in all competitions now for the first time in his managerial career. You mentioned the FA Cup final at the back end of last season that you were at. You saw that 6-0 demolition of Manchester City on that day. There has been a hangover, and regardless of whether people say it's got nothing to do with the back end of last season, it's perhaps a poor pre-season or just a bad start to this season, it appears, and the statistics suggest, it is a hangover. What's your take on Watford's start and where they go from here?
Yeah, the momentum is massively against them at the moment. It's interesting. They had such a positive season last season, and in some ways you do wonder, was that semi-final result against Wolves a little bit of a curse? And I'm just looking at it from the point of, it seemed after that game that, of course, players then wanted to make sure they were fit for the final, but I certainly saw a difference in performance thereafter, and it was a poor end to the season. You're always worried going into that final whether they could suddenly turn a run of defeats into a big victory against arguably the best team in the world at the moment, which they couldn't, and they were thoroughly beaten. Now, you often see it that the hangover can then continue into the next season. We've seen it this season, a few good examples being a Charlton in the Championship. They shouldn't be top of the Championship, yet they've taken this positive form that they've had in League One into the Championship. I can't help but feel that they had a poor end to last season, Watford, and they've continued in the same vein. Two games, no goals, four goals conceded. They haven't looked particularly good. I mean, that first result in particular would be the most disappointing one. Certainly to go away to Everton and lose 1-0, that's not the end of the world. It's always going to be a tough game going to Everton. But that game at home to Brighton. Now, Watford, for me, when I watch them from afar now, seem to have that in the locker every now and then. If I remember last season, it was a game against Bournemouth, I think, at home, where out of the blue, they get a bit of a drubbing. And they do seem to have this in the locker. So I just hope it's one of those anomalies and they get back to the kind of form that we'd expect from Watford. But it is a little bit concerning as a Watford fan. The other side of it is as well that I think the Premier League's got a little bit stronger this season. Mm. You know, we don't have a Huddersfield this season. There isn't a Cardiff. As well as they did last season, I think Cardiff were always expected to struggle last season. I think the three promoted clubs are a lot better than the three clubs that went down. So, look, I'm sure Watford will be fine. I'm sure they'll be more than fine, but they do need to shift this momentum soon.
We're going to talk about teammates a bit because a few of the lads currently still at the club were there when you were at Watford. Some have gone and come back. But first, Jose Holobas, I want to discuss because this is a guy who, let's not beat around the bush, likes to get stuck in. Mm. He likes a tackle, right? Now, he got another yellow at Goodison yesterday, and the statistic from this one is that he's received a yellow card in 35% of his Premier League appearances. So that's 36 yellow cards in 102 games. Now, some players gain a bit of a reputation for being a bit of a hard nut, for sticking the boot in. And ordinarily, fans quite like that. You think of Stuart Pearce, you think of Roy Keane, you think of the greats over the years. Kevin Muscat, I guess, who seemed like a pretty unpleasant footballer, but has become a bit of a cult hero with some clubs because he would do anything for the club, whether it was the club he was thinking about or just himself and absolutely steaming into people. I don't know. That's a discussion for another day. But Holobas, when you've got a player like that in your team who sometimes is potentially going to cause you problems, what are the teammates thinking about that?
Yeah. First and foremost, interesting fact, he lives on the same development as me. Mr. Ooh, Holobas.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that's amazing. So are you allowed to talk about this?
I can. No, I can. He lives in the same direction. Quite regularly, I'll see him just around and he'll be two-footing a pedestrian. You know what he's like. No, but he does. He lives in the same development. Although it's weird. We don't actually know each other because, of course, we're from different times. So I've seen him, but it's one of those awkward ones. Do I then go over to him and say, oh, hi, you might not know me because we play for... Do you know what I mean?
So you've never spoken to him?
No. I've seen him many a time, but I don't speak to him.
You're right. How do you start that? Do you go, hi, mate, I used to play for Watford. And he goes, okay, did you? I don't know who you are.
Then you've got that awkward kind of like, all right, well, you take care now. So, yeah.
Alternatively, it could be the start of a beautiful friendship.
It could be a blossoming friendship. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Anywho, kind of, I've ignored your question there a little bit. Yeah, so is it a liability, effectively, when you've got a
player? That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it can be. I think that... As well, I just think it's needless. Personally, I think it's needless a lot of the time. You know, you talk about emotional intelligence when it comes to a footballer and understanding that actually, if you haven't got that emotional intelligence or that cool head, that you can be a liability. Not just for the fact that you might get sent off, but of course you will get banned at times. Personally, I think it's needless. Of course, going in for heavy challenges at times can be a really positive thing. If you need to lift the crowd, there's nothing like a really strong challenge to get the crowd going. But at the same time, as a player sometimes, it's a really fine balance. As a player, if I see my teammates doing it and they're getting needlessly booked, I'm going to get annoyed as a teammate because, yeah, you're either playing up to the crowd or you've just got head loss. And either way, that doesn't work for me. I think if it's a case of we need to shift the momentum of this game and someone goes in with a crunch and challenge, I don't mind that. But again, it's a really fine line as to whether you get it right or not.
We talk about leaders a lot now in the Premier League and some clubs are lacking that. But in Watford, you'd say they've got them in abundance, I suppose. And people that you know, the likes of Ben Foster, the likes of Troy Deeney, Craig Cathcart played with. So, I mean, in terms of that, they're not short on leaders.
Which is why I don't worry too much about them. Adi Mariappa, you didn't mention either.
Course,
for me, is possibly the biggest out of the lot. I mean, from what I understand, Troy and Ben run that changing room. You know, massive characters, Troy Deeney in particular, and obviously Ben as well. Massive, massive characters. But you've got lots of good characters, which I think is important, which is why I don't worry too much, because I don't think it's a type where they're going to lose a few games, throw the toys out the pram, suddenly different cliques form within the change room and they've all lost their heads and suddenly we see Watford languishing at the bottom. I don't see that happening. I think they do have the types of characters where this week will be a big week for them. There'll be lots of heart-to-heart conversations. They'll get themselves going again and they'll soon buck the trend. But you just hope, again, we talk about momentum a lot. ideally, they do need a result in the next couple of games just to get themselves on the board, just to get themselves off the mark. And they're the type of team, like we saw last season, where they can go on winning streaks. You know, there's certain teams that seem to have this ability, and I feel that Watford do. Why they do, I don't know. But they are the kind of team that at some point in the season, they will win 5-6 games in a row. So, again, you kind of hope that happens sooner rather than later so they can be fighting at the top end as opposed to, at the moment, obviously down the bottom end.
As a journo and someone who works on radio, Troy Deeney is always a fascinating character. You speak to most journos, they'd love to get an interview with Troy because instantly you've got sound bites. Instantly you've got a headline. You've got a pull quote because he's very honest, brutally honest, refreshingly honest, in fact. And sometimes he says things that potentially come back to bite him. I suppose the comments that he made about Arsenal, which I don't think is a problem, the fact that then he got sent off against Arsenal and everyone said, oh, there you go. So you thought you could mess him up and then you go and get sent off. But what's he like, Troy Deeney, as a person and in that dressing room?
Well, I didn't actually play in the same team, but I've got to know him since, obviously going back there and met him several times. And in fact, my last interaction probably sums him up to an extent. So Alec Chamberlain's leaving Watford. In my opinion, and again, I only know from what I'd heard from certain people in the club, within the club, I think it could have been handled a little bit better. There wasn't really any leaving party or anything like that for him. It was a case of, right, there you go, see you later, thank you very much. So then Troy Deeney took it upon himself to gather up all the staff and himself to go to a local place near the training ground, the Colney Fox, near the training ground, and essentially put a lot of money behind the bar and said, right, this is your leaving party, you know, enjoy. And it was great. I turned up, there was a few ex-players had turned up, and there was a really big gathering to wish him well, and that was all paid for by Troy Deeney, which for me, I thought, fair play. You know, no one else had took it upon themselves to do that. So he is that. He's got a good heart, you know, and obviously he's had a crazy upbringing, you know, and a crazy time previously. I know there was a time where, you know, obviously he had his troubles and whether he really would have a career. I know Watford had the decision as to whether they wanted to continue with him or not. And obviously their faith in him has been repaid. And you just wonder how much some of the hard times that he's had has now played into what he is now, whether this sort of carefree attitude that we see where he does give absolutely everything in every area that he goes into, not always necessarily positively. And you're right, there will be critics with how he is. But at the same time, there's so much positivity that he's brought that club, you know, so many goals and everything else that he's scored, etc. I've got nothing but good words to say about him, because I think a character like that, to have been through what he's been through and to use it in such a positive way, he will go down as a Watford legend already, even if he was to leave.